In an age of international cyber hacking and meddling in elections online, what can this country do to thwart attacks on American institutions? A closer look coming right up. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, never miss a show. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and through the WJCT app. Just ahead, don't miss our conversation with former CIA and NSA Director General Michael Hayden about global challenges, the war on terror, and cybersecurity. It's a preview of his talk in Jacksonville tonight, and you can get on the line right now with your questions for the general at 549-2937. Then later, it's our movable feast today as we spotlight Chef Chris Brown and the unique downtown venue 927 Events. Plus, we've got a look at the upcoming environmental summit this Friday at Florida Coastal School of Law, how this area can better protect itself against hurricanes. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, he was on the front lines as the world began to rapidly change. General Michael Hayden was director of the National Security Agency under Presidents Clinton and Bush 41, and then he ran the CIA under Bush and President Obama. He's an expert on the global political climate and on the balance between liberty and security in intelligence work. That can sometimes be a tricky balance. General Hayden is in town and speaking tonight, courtesy of the World Affairs Council of Jacksonville, on the future of intelligence, his talk happening at the University Center on the UNF campus. He joins the show now with his thoughts on cyber challenges, cybersecurity, emerging threats in the war on terror, and more. General Michael Hayden, it's such a pleasure to have you on the program, and thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Melissa. Good morning.
Good morning. And here's our question to callers. As we talk about cybersecurity and cyber threats to this nation and other security challenges, what are your questions for General Michael Hayden, former director of the National Security Agency and the CIA? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we welcome your comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. We're already getting those, and we'll go to those in just a few moments. General Hayden, Russian President Vladimir Putin used front groups like WikiLeaks and others to leak emails from the Hillary Clinton campaign and other information. He's deployed bots and troll farms to divide this nation, divide groups politically, doing it via social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook. He's also placed human bodies, real live people inside this country, pretending to be Americans to rile us up and divide us. U.S. intelligence agencies, all of them are in accord that the Russians have done this and meddled in our elections and that they plan to do it again in 2018 and 2020. Do you see this as an act of war?
No, not an act of war. But it is an assault on American democratic processes being done by the Russians, frankly, I think, to try to pull us down to their level. I mean, Putin is basing his domestic legitimacy on restoring Russian pride, on addressing historic Russian grievances. But he's doing it with a fairly weak state. I mean, the economy of California is about 50% larger than the economy of the Russian Federation. So as to give you some sense of scale here. And so he's looking for tools, not so much to come to our level, but to bring us down to his level. And so he's trying to create confusion within the United States, a freezing of any policy direction, and frankly, trying to support an erosion of our confidence in our own institutions.
And sadly, unfortunately, it does seem to be working, even though, as you say, Russia is not nearly as powerful a country as we are. We do see declining confidence in American institutions. And how much do you attribute to the cyber meddling that we've witnessed over the last couple of years?
Now, that's a great question. Now, you're asking someone who's already introduced me as the former director of this three-letter agency or that three-letter agency. And if the United States were ever to do anything like this, I mean, the generic term for this is called covert influence. And one of the iron laws of physics when it comes to covert influence is that a foreign covert influence campaign does not create fractures in a society. The best a foreign covert influence campaign can do is to identify pre-existing fractures and then to exploit them. And so to a first order here, the fix for what the Russians are doing is not in our electronics, not in our cyber tools, it's in our hearts, because the Russians are exploiting the divisions in American society.
While they continue to do that, what's your reaction to government response to cyber meddling, not just from Russia, but perhaps from other actors, other players like China? How do you feel that we are responding to this or not?
So there are important ways that you have to parse out the challenge. You've got cyber meddling, I think is the phrase you used, Melissa, and that covers a variety of sins. Fundamentally, we have been most concerned about the cyber domain in terms of theft of data, whether it's intellectual property, negotiating positions, your PIN number, my credit card number, my embarrassing emails, and so on. That's been largely the focus. But the more we exist in what we've come to call the cyber domain, we see other kinds of sins, not just stealing our data, but manipulating our data or destroying our data or denying us access to our data. And there are historic examples of using cyber tools to actually create physical destruction. I mean, the classic case of that was something called Stuxnet, where a cyber weapon was used to destroy about 1,000 centrifuges in Iran. Or more recently, clearly the Russians turning out a good fraction of the lights in western Ukraine about 2 years ago. And so we've got a variety of cyber issues that we need to secure ourselves against. And then in addition to that, you've got what we just discussed with regard to this influence campaign, where cyber wasn't the endpoint. Cyber was the enabling tool, the theft of the emails from the Democrat National Committee, the theft of John Podesta's emails, and so on.
Do you think it influenced the outcome of the election?
Well, I mean, honest men can differ as to how much it influenced. I certainly think that the Russians wouldn't have done it if they didn't think there was a payoff. But the influence on the election is beyond the art and science of any of us to measure. And therefore, we should not use this very necessary discussion that you're suggesting as a way to challenge the legitimacy of Donald Trump as president.
And so I'm sure you'll get this question tonight. What is your reaction then to the president's response to Special Counsel Mueller's probe of potential coordination between the Trump campaign and Russian meddling in the election?
It is very unfortunate that the president can't distinguish the two things I just suggested, Melissa. The president cannot separate in his mind the reality of what the Russians did and the necessity of what Bob Mueller is doing. He cannot disassociate that from attacks on his own legitimacy as president. And therefore, I think his response to this has fallen way short of what it is we need as a country. Now, the career professionals in the government, as you saw 2 weeks ago when the intelligence chiefs testified, they get it. They know what the Russians are doing.
They spoke with one voice, yes.
They did.
Now, you used to run the NSA, General. I want to ask you a somewhat related question about Edward Snowden, WikiLeaks and Edward Snowden. Was that a Russian operation? Is Snowden now an agent of Russia?
Yeah, so you know, you asked me as a former director, and former intel people, certainly in the Western tradition, work from data to conclusions. They don't work from conclusions backward in order to find data. And so when I look for data, do I have evidence that the Russians in any way aided Snowden in the original theft? Now, they aided him later with regard to Sanctuary, but in the original theft, I have no evidence of that. I have no evidence he was acting as an agent of anyone. When I work backward, again, getting out of my intelligence profession's mode of thinking, when I work backward, man, how does a 20-something pull that off? I mean, one of the hypotheses you come up with is, well, maybe he had help. But again, Melissa, I don't have evidence of the help. And so I just avoid making that accusation.
And how much heat do you think needs to come down on social media platforms in terms of, for example, just the other day that Twitter had what they called a Twitter lockout, and as a way to cleanse the platform of bots that are spreading propaganda, in particular bots that are linked to Russian troll farms. How much blame do you assign to social media, and how much of this should they be asked to shoulder to harden up our defenses to this new battlefield, essentially?
So I wouldn't use the word blame or guilt. I would use the word responsibility, all right, which is, you know, not morally condemning, but does suggest some things you got to go do. And one of the things we got to go do is to use our technology, which is well within reach, to distinguish when a human being is doing something on social media and when machines are doing something on social media, and to filter out the machine activity, because no one can make the claim that that is contributing to a dialogue, that is distorting a dialogue. So to a first order, it's within our technological capacity to know when bots are doing something that causes something to trend. And we should expect these companies to simply filter that out as a matter of simple seeking the truth.
Let's go to your calls now for General Michael Hayden. He speaks tonight at UNF via the World Affairs Council of Jacksonville on cybersecurity, 549-2937. To join the show, Jordan is visiting Jacksonville. Hey, Jordan. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jordan.
Yeah, first off, thank you so much for your service for so many years to our country. But the question that I had was more related to the recent news that we've seen about Chinese-owned security-type companies that are operating inside the U.S., such as Hikvision cameras or the cell phone companies such as Huawei and things like that that have Chinese government ownership in these systems, and the threat that that may pose to us. Do you place a lot of credence into these possibilities that these could be used as intelligence gathering devices inside the U.S., and should we possibly ban those things as there's been conversation towards that?
Yeah, I think the answers to your question, Jordan, are yes and yes and yes. Now, with that said, now I'm a security guy, all right? I'm not an international commerce guy. And there are legitimate arguments pushing back against basing everything on absolutely perfect security. We are part of a globalized economy. We want to sell things globally. We have to accept the reality that other people are going to want to sell things inside the United States. But we do have concerns in my old community with regard to the Chinese, who were almost relentless, is the word I would use, in their attempt to steal American data and especially American intellectual property and American technology. One of the more recent fronts in this, Jordan, is Chinese money, venture capital money, buying in very early into American technological startups. Not so much because they're a good business investment, but because they learn the best and the newest American technological innovations that way. And right now, Senator John Cornyn from Texas has a bill in front of Congress to actually begin to address that, so that we don't make that a totally open field for the Chinese to play in.
What keeps you up at night? Is that what keeps you up at night, knowing what you know, reading what you've read?
No. What keeps me up at night is the debate inside the American body politic, trying to decide who we are domestically and who we are internationally. We are, whatever you might think of what's going on today, we are debating our fundamentals as a people. and that keeps me awake.
And, you know, I've seen a lot of chatter general about that recently on social media from former NatSec types like yourself, people that worked in national security. And in recent weeks, they've made these very troubling comments saying that they see the conditions in this country that they used to see in the former Yugoslavia. I don't like hearing that.
The kind of tribalism
that drives just hatred and dehumanization of those with whom you disagree, those are not good signs.
They're not. But the distinction between ourselves and Yugoslavia, where I have served a lot, and I was there during the war, is that our tribalism is based upon politics and policy and is not always ethnically driven.
They had ethnic divisions, yeah.
That's correct. Now, the tribalism isn't a bad word to describe the corners that all of us are retreating into, where we want to maintain the identity of our own tribe, even in the face of data and logical arguments that someone else might throw in front of us. And so, I mean, we've seen it in this last debate over the Second Amendment, NRA, bump stocks, age at which you can buy weapons, whether all weapons should be available to all people, and so on. I mean, there is a rational debate to be had here, but you don't see a lot of evidence of that. You do see us retreating into our tribal corners and yelling at one another. So in that sense, I agree, but it's not the same as the meltdown of Yugoslavia.
Of course, that led to genocide. And so you see it, though, as an imperative that we resist this tribalism, that we...
Yeah, a fact-based political discussion, not faith-based. And please, that's faith with a very small F, you know, based upon a priori beliefs, preferences, and emotions, rather than data. We really do need to return to fact-based discussions.
Let's go to a few more calls for General Michael Hayden, former CIA and NSA director. He speaks tonight at UNF via the World Affairs Council of JAX, 549-2937, to join the show. Peter is at the beaches. Hey, Peter.
Hi, good morning. My comment that I don't believe I've heard anyone talk about is that the effectiveness of the divisive campaign is simply because it feeds the narrative that people already want to believe. So when they see something, they say, boy, that's just the kind of thing they do. It has to be true, instead of verifying the content. That's my comment.
Yes.
Peter, you are absolutely spot on, and that's what I was trying to refer to earlier as we kind of retreat into our tribal corners. We expect the worst of the other tribes. And when something comes out about somebody in some of the other corners, we immediately say, yeah, that sounds just like them, I believe, without investigating the facts of the case. Melissa, I'm gonna pull you and your listeners through a Washington, D.C. knothole here, but very briefly. There was this grand debate on the unmasking of U.S. identities during the transition to the Trump administration.
Sure.
Intercepts in which Americans were referred to or may have been a communicant, all lawfully collected. This is all above board. And there was this grand debate that people in the outgoing administration wanted to know the identity of the U.S. persons being referred to there. And that got turned into our public debate, as Peter just suggested, into a prima facie evidence of wrongdoing. And those of us who, and by the way, I'm out of government 8-9 years. I mean, I'm not in this. But those of us who have been in government look at that and go, oh, my God, that's normal. That's how this works. But it would immediately used by one faction or another for these darker purposes.
Brian tweets the show, if a commentator makes even a mild criticism of Putin, that comment on Facebook or Twitter is dogpiled by fake accounts saying Putin has no malice or the USA shouldn't pass judgment. Putin's trolls are still active on social media. Thanks for that tweet. Here are some comments for you on our First Coast, speaking of Facebook, on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. General Hayden Jim tweets the show, should the U.S. be doing more to secure voting machines and election software from snooping and hacking? The Russians did sort of tap on some voting machines. That has been documented. It was sort of like knocking on the windows. They didn't open the door and get inside the house. What about that?
Yeah, and Jim brings up a good point. And Melissa, you've got it spot on. The Russians, whatever the Russians did in the 2016 election, they did not manipulate the vote count. Now, they poked at about 20, 21 states, election rolls, and so on. That may have broadly been part of their just messing with our heads. You know what I mean? I mean, if you view the objectives to be eroding confidence in our processes, just the fact that they did what you described may have met all the needs they had. That said, we got to lock these things down because we can't have future elections, the outcomes of them being doubted because of real or alleged foreign manipulation. So we need to lock those down. But I guess what I'm trying to emphasize the point here is that's not what happened in 2016, and that was bad enough.
Another comment from you from Facebook. Please talk a little bit about NSA's stolen cyberware and the future of Ukraine.
Hard for me to confirm or deny something the government hasn't confirmed or denied. So my comments on what you're referring to here is simply this. You know, I defended what American intelligence has done. I did it while I was in government, and I've done it since I left government because although honest men can differ, and these are the debates free societies need to have as to how you balance liberty, security, safety, privacy, I get that. I do believe that American intelligence operates within the law with good intentions, and I am able to defend almost all of what American intelligence does. I really do in good conscience. But, Melissa, one thing I cannot defend is American intelligence having very powerful cyber weapons that they cannot control. American intelligence having very powerful tools, which are very useful, and I know American intelligence would only use appropriately. I can't defend their having them if they can't keep them secret. And so these alleged leakages of powerful cyber tools is really troubling, even for someone like me who's a veteran of this career field.
This is just a short preview of what's sure to be a very insightful talk this evening on the UNF campus. General Hayden, it's a pleasure. Thank you for giving us some time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
He's General Michael Hayden, former director of the CIA and the NSA, speaking tonight on cyber challenges, the global terror war, and more via the World Affairs Council of Jacksonville at the Herbert University Center on the UNF campus. That's tonight. Well, much more still ahead, meanwhile, on the show later. An environmental summit is coming up later this week in town, and it's an important topic. They're going to be talking about how to protect the public from hurricanes, among other things. But up next, it's Movable Feast today, and we're paying a visit to 927 Events. Back in a moment.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. When people are hurt through no fault of their own, answering who, what, when, where, why, and how is critical to proving the truth. More at waynehogan.law.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state
about the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9. Your community, your world, your music.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Welcome back. It's a downtown location that is now home to numerous events and your catering needs. In today's Movable Feast, our regular look at dining and hospitality trends around town, Lee Cord of the Women's Food Alliance talks with Chef Chris Brown of 927 Events.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate too. Here's Cacciatore.
You have one of the most unique buildings in all of historic Jacksonville. Can you tell us about your building and a little of its history and how we would identify it if we were coming to an event at 927?
Well, it's one of the older buildings in Jacksonville. It has one of the oldest freight elevators in operation in Jacksonville. It's over 120 years old. Years ago, it was a standard sales, which was pre-service merchandise.
So it was a warehouse of merchandise.
Yes.
And a distribution center.
Yes.
As well?
And then it was also a... it's been a great adventure as far as building it out, restoring it to its unique grandeur.
And usability also.
And usability.
It's really a charmer.
We have some really fun events inside that building.
How many floors do you have for events?
Two floors for events, the first floor and the second floor.
So when you had this vision, ten years ago, did you see it as an event space?
We did. When we started the project to build it out, it really grew into an amazing space to have art and events.
Art and events. It's very charming and it's very unique and it's a photo opportunity. For people who have not been there, what capacity can you do? If you did a cocktail party...
If you do a standing cocktail party easily in one area of the building, you can have 150 people.
Because I remember we did a first floor, we did a mead tasting one evening on the first floor with a honey tasting.
Yes.
And then we all segued upstairs and we had a seated dinner and it was fabulous.
Yes, and that's Bee Friends Farm, local honey.
Now tell me about yourself as a chef, Chef Chris Brown.
Well, I try to focus a lot on local ingredients. I'm Southern born, Southern raised, all of that good stuff. So, you know, the events that we do, we try to incorporate as much of our own personality without overbearing somebody's event.
But all your menus are customized.
Yes, every menu is customized for the event.
And do you have your cooking facility inside 927 Events, or do you have a commissary somewhere else?
We have our commissary on Beaver Street, and we prepare all of our products on Beaver Street at Beaver Street Commissary, and then we bring them to 927 Events prepared. We have some really fun wedding receptions, bachelor parties, corporate retreats all day long. It just gives people a different viewpoint of downtown because, you know, the way the building's decorated with local art, there's a lot of flash in there. And
oh,
it just
you just
feels
reminded
good.
Me you had a mural competition. Now, isn't 927 Events, don't you have a giant painted mural on
we
the
do.
Outside?
It's on the west side of our building. It was in conjunction with Art Republic downtown. They did 17 murals in downtown Jacksonville back in October, November. And we were fortunate enough to be able to host Okudo, which did an amazing mural on our building.
What's the image?
It is the Seven Muses, and it's dancing, and it just fits. It's so bright. It's so beautiful. If you haven't seen it, you can go to our Facebook page and see the mural. You can go to our website, when you're driving into downtown now, it's such a bright, beautiful welcome to
downtown.
That's
really fantastic. Really dressing up downtown Jacksonville.
It really is. It's just gorgeous.
But I know that the contest is over, and you used the contest with the mural as a fundraiser. What was the organization that you benefited with the fundraiser?
The Child Guidance Center of Jacksonville.
And you had two parts to your competition?
We did.
Tell us about that.
You had to guess the number of spray paint cans that were used, and that was one of the competitions. And the other was the number of colors in the mural.
And how many colors? What was the winning number?
50.
50 different colors, and how many cans?
115.
Now, did anybody win the specific number?
They did. We had one hit the number of colors right on the head.
And their prize was?
Their prize is 2 round-trip tickets anywhere in the United States that United flies.
Whoa, how fantastic.
For each contest, yeah.
And was it a Jacksonville person who won?
Yes, both of them.
Good.
Both of them. It was a fun contest. We promoted it heavily on all of our social media pages.
That's really the truth of making hospitality work. That it was great for the organization to be, donated to by 927 Events, but you got people engaged in what you were doing. Well, I think it's amazing that 927 Events is not just a destination to come and enjoy the space, but really to be a partner of helping businesses downtown Jacksonville and to continue the growth and the positivity of what's going on in Jacksonville. Well, I am delighted that you've been with me today. Thank you. We will watch for March 3rd and a tribute to Florida Theater, 927events.com. And also, thank you so much for being Movable Feast's sponsor the past year. We're looking forward to doing more things with you.
As are we.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
And we'll be right back.
Irene Robinson loves Chicago.
My heart is here.
And she loves young people.
I vowed that I would fight for all children at all schools.
And that love burned with ferocity when the city closed 50 schools at once.
Closing school is a hate crime.
What happened when Irene put up a fight? On the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT and the Florida Theater present Wildcrats live on stage at the Florida Theater March 4th at 1 p.m. Watch the Kret brothers bring their creature adventure fun from the popular PBS Kids series to life on stage. Tickets available at floridatheater.com.
Many people in Jacksonville never come in contact with those outside their core communities. WJCT is embarking on a journey called Beyond the Core to start a citywide conversation about what unites the people who call Duval County home and what makes our smaller communities unique. We might have an upcoming Beyond the Core listening event in your neighborhood. Check WJCTnews.org to find out.
On the next Jazz Night in America, Christian Scott Atunde Ajua. We're in his hometown, New Orleans, digging into what he calls stretch music, breaking boundaries, challenging traditions.
The actual tradition in this music is to continue to search for new ways of expression. It's transient, it's ever growing.
That's on the next Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's an annual event that takes a look at important environmental issues. The Environmental Summit at Florida Coastal School of Law is coming up this Friday, and this year's theme is timely, Protecting the Public from Harm, Hurricanes, Resiliency, and Infrastructure Planning. That's something a lot of us are very interested in, especially as hurricane season draws closer. We're pleased to welcome Florida Coastal Professor Eric Hall. Good morning.
Good morning.
Quentin White is here, Director of the Marine Science Research Institute at Jacksonville University.
Good morning.
And student Kinsley Vassey. She's president of the Real Property and Environmental Law Society.
Good morning.
All right, Professor Hall, let's begin with you. This is on the Florida Coastal Campus. You've been doing this summit for several years now. This year's theme is certainly timely. You're talking about hurricanes, resiliency, and more. Tell us a little bit about what's going to be on the agenda.
Oh, sure. So as anybody listening here knows, the 2017 Atlantic hurricane season was one of the most active and most destructive on record. We had three Category 4 hurricanes hit the continental United States within a month. As a result of that, we saw a lot of displacement of individuals. We saw destruction to infrastructure. We saw damage to the environment. We saw a number of things that were happening throughout the state of Florida. And so we thought that the topic was timely. We thought that people would have an interest in it. And so we pulled together experts that are going to talk about a number of issues. We're going to talk about infrastructure planning and smart growth and smart planning along the coast. We're going to talk about ecosystems and the impacts to ecosystems. We're going to take a close look at what happened here in Jacksonville and St. Augustine. We're going to talk about emergency response planning and preparedness, volunteer efforts. We're going to talk about what happens to the vulnerable people in a population, what happens to those individuals that are displaced in the community. So we're trying to take sort of a holistic view to the extent that we can in one summit and really sort of provide the audience with an overview of what's happened, what we're doing in response to that, and how we can move forward.
Excellent. All vital issues, Dr. Quint White, as we prepare for hurricane season. We weren't prepared for the level of historic flooding we saw during Hurricane Irma. We can learn a lot from that experience. But as you prepare to hold this summit and we look at these issues, these resiliency issues, Jacksonville's taken a lot of criticism for not being very resilient. So how much is that going to come up in the discussion?
I think it'll be prominently featured. We sort of had not only the impact of Matthew in 2016, but then Irma in 2017. We looked at what happened in Houston with Harvey. You know, I think it's time to get our head out of the sand and start thinking about this. We are fortunate. One of our speakers is going to be the mayor of St. Augustine, Nancy Shriver, and she's working on resiliency because St. Augustine, in fact, if anything, has it worse than Jacksonville does.
Really? Okay. Yes. Nancy Shaver speaking, mayor of City of St. Augustine, along with some other people who have a lot to say about this. Kinsley Vassey, your president of the Real Property and Environmental Law Society at Florida Coastal. Tell us a little bit about that society.
So we used to be the Environmental Law Society. We always did the summit every single year, helped Professor Hull set that up. But this year we have integrated real property into that because we feel like those things really go hand in hand. We have meetings almost every month where we bring in speakers to talk about environmental issues in the community. We do pro bono events, beach cleanups, things like that. But the summit is really our big sort of event that mm-hmm. we help with.
Well, of course, if you're a property owner in Florida, this should concern you.
Very much so.
Because stronger storms, rising oceans are threatening property, mm-hmm. particularly coastal property. How much is that going to be a point of discussion this Friday?
I think it'll be a significant point of discussion. One of the things that we're going to investigate is the likelihood of intensifying hurricanes. So Dr. Elsner from Florida State, who has worked on this, he's got over 150 publications and multiple books dealing with hurricanes and tropical cyclones. His research has shown that with the ocean temperatures warming up, they're providing more fuel for hurricanes, and the likelihood, there's a strong likelihood that these hurricanes will be more powerful, will provide higher winds, will deliver more rain along the coastal areas. And so particularly in Florida, we've seen through at least the last year specifically, those really strong storms that come through the state of Florida really make us vulnerable. There is an interesting aspect of Hurricane Irma. When Hurricane Irma came through, the projected path initially going through Miami, the Weather Service said that the surge should be 7 to 10 feet above sea level. most people in Miami are around 4 feet above sea level. Mm-hmm. Miami itself was built on a swamp. Miami Beach was built on a barrier island, both of which are extremely susceptible to storm surge and inundation. And much of Florida is in the same position. So all of that is problematic. And of course, we've built heavily along the coast. All of these things are happening at a time where we have mass migration to the coast, and more people are moving to that area. About 50% of the U.S. population lives very close to the coast. So it is a significant part of the discussion. It's something that we really need to dive into.
That's something, Quint White, that is incredibly bizarre for me to witness from where I sit hosting this program. More and more I see academics such as yourself, policy planners such as the Northeast Florida Regional Planning Council, they're housed here in our building at WJCT, mm-hmm. people that are in the business of looking at these issues, even the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, increasingly sounding more dire warnings about this, and yet the building just keeps right on continuing.
Yep.
And at a certain point, the rubber is going to meet the road. We are not seeing any sort of governmental response to this data that seems to be taking into account the increasing peril to building on the coast, the economic peril that we're facing with this.
Oh, I agree. And it really is being short-sighted. And it's a shame that our elected officials don't see beyond the next election. It's probably not going to happen on their watch, quote-unquote. But we're going to have to, at some point, reinstitute some sort of growth management control over growth in low-lying areas. There's some speculation out there now about where do you build and what do you build and how resilient is it? I've had colleagues question the idea of a 30-year mortgage on coastal property. You know, we don't know. Sea level's rising. It appears to be accelerating. And there's a lot of concern about that. And yet, as a government, we're not doing anything about it.
Infrastructure planning is on the agenda for this summit. What recommendations will the group be making when it comes to infrastructure planning?
I think there's a number of issues that we have to talk about. First of all, we want to make sure that we're building smart, that we're building resilient structures, that we are being smart about where we place that growth along the coast, inland. It's interesting because it's been estimated about approximately $1 trillion of real estate are at risk of sea level inundation. Much of the policymaking that you referenced before and sort of the stagnation with movement is really tied to arguments related to uncertainty and what we do, whether we should move forward. But, that argument about inaction is really inaccurate. If you look at the studies, the cost of inaction is roughly 4 to 10 times greater than taking action now. So we have to talk about not only how we build, where we build new building codes. After Hurricane Andrew ripped through Miami, there were changes in building codes that really changed a number of things and improved the structures. But we also have to determine how dense we're going to build.
And that is just a short window into the 19th annual Northeast Florida Environmental Summit. It's coming up this Friday at Florida Coastal School of Law. Just go to their website for more. It's right on the homepage at fcsl.edu. Eric Hull with Florida Coastal, Dr. Quint White with JU's Marine Science Research Institute student Kinsley Vassy. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We'll be right back.
Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Injuries can happen when you least expect it. For over 40 years, our attorneys have dug out the facts to help juries decide what happened and who's at fault. More at waynehogan.law.
Former Republican Party Chief Michael Steele is pushing back after a conservative spokesman said Steele got that job simply because he is black.
What the hell does that my race have to do with any of that?
The GOP says it is a big tent, but who is really welcome inside? Race and the Republican Party, next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, antidepressants and other psychotropic drugs. We talk with psychologist and journalist Lauren Slater, whose new book, Blue Dreams, is in part about the science and history of mood-altering drugs. She'll also talk about the medicine she's taken as a patient with bipolar disorder and depression and the side effects she's experienced. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the World, next time, the execution of a rebel fighter in British-controlled India, 1857, his skull later displayed in an English pub. Now, his story.
It comes with a responsibility to be handling somebody else's mortal remains. You know, he never imagined that his remnants would still be in existence 150 years after these events.
A new look at history inspired by a skull on the World. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Keep up to date with your favorite WJCT programs or listen to your favorite 89.9 FM shows online. Visit WJCT.org and explore a variety of programming content. It's just a click away. WJCT. Log on. Find out.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, I'm going to read a tweet from a great friend of the station at the Urban Core, Antonio Allegretti of the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville. Did you see this the other day? He said, the WJCT Jackson music programming is like a built-in soundtrack that flicks on when the stars come out and the Hart Bridge lights pop on. It makes me feel like Matthew McConaughey driving a Lincoln around the city.
Oh, yeah.
And that's all due to the smooth beats of our own music director, David Luckin, who joins us now with a look at what he's spinning after hours this week. Hey, David.
Hey, Melissa, tonight is the best one yet.
Really?
We do Turntable Tuesday every Tuesday night. Grab some great vinyl. Tonight is the epic Isaac Hayes, actually his second album, most of us think it's his first, called Hot Buttered Soul, with a 12-minute version of Walk On By, and get this, an 18-minute rap and song that you know so well by Glenn Campbell and Jimmy Webb called By the Time I Get to Phoenix.
Oh, right.
It's like a... Oh, it's just incredible. I remember buying it in 69 and just was blown away. It actually set the tempo for what black and soul music would be
after
this.
How long have you been doing Turntable Tuesday?
Not quite a year, but I've been buying a lot of great vinyl online, just a brand new 180-gram virgin vinyl albums.
So the whole idea of Turntable Tuesday is nothing but vinyl.
Exactly. Spinning good vinyl that... That may not even be on CD yet. So I pull a lot of my own original albums. Like we did Brubeck one night, the original 1959 album sounded great. And then if I don't have an original that's in good enough shape, I just buy one. So I'm buying an album a week. Don't tell my wife.
It's too late.
Yeah, it's too late.
The unimpeachable Kevin Mershart has just informed me that we have a little music from
tonight. Here
you
go. Here's okay. Walk On By.
Something to listen to. Very nice.
Well, what's interesting there is you hear the kind of syrupy strings with this funky, nice underbelly of the bass and drum. So it's and there's the girl singers. And for your listeners out there, if you've never heard this, this is well worth turning into. It'll be right off the top tonight at 9 o'clock.
Now,
also may know him from The Chef for younger folks who watch South Park. This
sure,
is
Isaac Hayes. Sure.
Yeah.
And that's what's so cool about our after hours block of music shows, because David, of course, grew up with all the baby boomer music, but we have music hosts that are of all ages and genres.
Yep.
We're really excited about a new show called Taste Test with Damian Lamar, which is just a great new show.
Sundays at 10.
Sunday nights at 10, and that's also building an audience.
It's really good. Now, I'm already stealing his music. I'm hearing his music. I'm playing on the Electro Lounge. He's got great taste in music, And we're kind of kindred spirits because we both sit in the studio and play things for each other, and we both just open our eyes wide and say, oh, that's great. We also have a limited run this winter of music from the 30s and 40s called On the Beam Sunday nights, and I'm dropping in all the great music from the 30s and 40s, including live air checks and some original commercials, and you can win a 1936 Chevrolet. Just email Melissa. No, that was last week's commercial. You know, they were giving away a Chevrolet in 1936, I'm sure.
So Oprah didn't come up with that first?
She
amazing.
She did not. Everyone gets a Chevy.
And we also have Avant Radio with Keith Marks, another
great
show.
Yeah, that's really eclectic. I'm envious of these guys. They're all younger than me, and they know more than me, so good for them.
That's
They're playing great shows, and I really a lot of mutual respect all the way around for everyone. Andrew, who does the Blues Horizon, Ryan, who does Indie Endeavor. We just try and keep the music going. We've also remind people that the classical music is on HD2, and of course we've got the Music of Your Life on Relax Radio. So we got a lot of music here to complement what you do.
There's music streaming everywhere, and you can listen to it the old-fashioned way. You can stream it through our app. We make it available to you any way you want, so... Tune in tonight.
Yeah, tune in. And don't walk in by. Just sit right there and listen to Mr. Hayes.
Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchuk. You know, and Chef was always so nice to the kids.
He was.
You know, he was always so cool with the kids.
Yeah, it's all good.
And he'd occasionally come out with a comment that was so adult, and they'd be like, huh?
What? But you got it, Melissa.
Never miss our show. Download the WJCT app to listen anytime. 1A's up next with a look at the challenges for conservatives of color. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Enjoy a little more music and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.